The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Beauvais. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Beauvais.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is AM 790, your station for talking business. Markets were all positive today. A little bit of news, President Trump in the hot seat again regarding the Russian controversy. Markets don't care about that stuff usually, believe it or not. You may think it would, but big stuff like war or threat of war definitely affects stock prices. Raising or lowering of income tax rates can affect it as well. Those are the two biggest ones, actually. And then the rest of the events that occur around us in the world have some impact on stock values, but in a diminishing manner. The first two are the big ones that have the biggest impact. That's, again, war or potential war. And it can be good for economy, actually. It's crazy and embarrassing as that sounds, but it can be because at least old-fashioned wars, you made a lot of stuff. Today, there's still a lot of cost involved in conflict, and so therefore it does rev things up. You know, we don't want that kind of rev, though, right? At least I don't. I'm sure most of you don't either. Take a look at Vanguard Long-Term Treasury Fund, the symbol VUSTX. Not picking on Vanguard. They're a wonderful, wonderful organization. Point is, these are long-term treasury bills, bonds. And for about a year and a half now, we've been talking about interest rates rising, and it's begun to occur. And a couple things we believed would happen when that did occur. And the first is this, is that these long-term treasuries would have a suppression in value. The last 1 year, the funds are down about 10%, where bonds that are, I think, designed for rising interest rates, like floating rate bonds, are up about 5% for 12 months. Where the traditional long-term treasuries, with about the same yield, about 4%, about a 10% decline, that could go to 30 if rates rise, depending on how fast they go, you know. So it's a hard thing to understand or to even believe, I guess, is that I've had people tell me I have no risk in my investments. I have all the no-risk stuff. And I look and they have 30-year treasury bonds. That's not no risk. Interest rates rose quickly, and you have 30-year treasury bonds, your principal could decline by up to 50% on your U.S. treasuries. And you would say, but I thought these were guaranteed. And I would say, yes, they are guaranteed if you hold them the whole journey. They're not guaranteed day to day. What you're seeing on your statement, if you have a decline in bond prices, is just the aftermarket price. That's what the world is willing to give you for them if you're willing to sell them. But just like your house, right? If you want to sell your house, if you're not in a hurry, but you think it's time, and you think you know it's worth about $300, and somebody knocks on your door and offers you $162, what do? You just say no and close the door. Do the same thing with investments, folks. The natural tendency to react and sell when things are low is one of the most bizarre human issues in the psychology world, I believe. Everything else in the world, when it's cheap in price, we want to buy it, right? When stocks are cheap, people want to sell them. It's just backwards. It's crazy. Why is that? Because that is not intellect at work. That's emotion. Emotion makes you make decisions like that. Intellect keeps you on track. Emotion does not, especially in the world of finance. People who are highly emotional tend to have trouble with money. And I found, at least in my family and people that I've known over the years, now that I'm gray-bearded, you know, and have a little bit of wisdom. The people I've met in my life, almost without exception, who had trouble with money, couldn't save any, the whole group, not a lot of them, but there's, you know, here and there. I know who they are because they all came to me for help, so I know that. I'm the money guy in the family, you know, so they all come to me when there's an issue. But the group in general, whether it be family, friends, or clients I met along the way, or whatever, it seems to me that it's really discipline, more than it is anything else. If you're having a tough time financially, I mean, don't be spending money. You got to hunker down and save during tough times. And people don't do it. They're not willing to change your style. I didn't take a structured vacation, I think, for about 11 years. I had a little, Friday off, a long weekend, but I didn't take a two-week period off for about 10 years because it wasn't feasible. The economy was bad. We was going back, a decade or more like 15, 18 years. And I had a young family to take care of, and I got them to a vacation, but I couldn't afford to take the two weeks off because I was self-employed, wouldn't get paid. And so I got them to a vacation, but I had to go back to work. So I would bring them to the beach house, kiss them on the head, and go back to work and come down midweek, call every day and see how they're doing. And but there was a 10-year period where I got the family a vacation, but I couldn't afford to take the time off and pay for the vacation. So we did it local. My point is that there are times in life when you have to be willing to hunker down and just not care about stuff and find another way to be content, watching TV or gardening or reading or whatever it is. But if you find yourself or someone that you care about has a lot of trouble with money, if you can't get past the idea that it's really a discipline problem, 80% of personal finance is discipline, not financial knowledge. This is why all of you, with no exception, that are listening right now, know someone, or maybe you're not old enough yet, but when you get around my age, you'll know someone who surprises everyone with their financial success in life. And people will say, I didn't think he or she was that financially savvy along the way, And that's because it's not what it was. It's discipline. The discipline decision to save some money. You have to understand human nature is a very, very habitual creature. And if you think you can't afford to save any money right now, I challenge you to have $10 a week taken out of your pay. And I assure you that within 3 months, you won't even notice it. It takes about 3 months for human beings to, but that's really not that long a period of time, considering, you may be 40 or 50 years old, that's a very brief moment in time to change a habit. So if you're having trouble saving, seek out structured programs through your employer. That's the easiest way. See if they have a local bank that'll let you take some money out and build up a savings account. Saving when structured and disciplined is best. Make sure that it gets done, right? Why do you think a lot of people hire a personal trainer, right? Because if you're supposed to show up at the gym at 2 o'clock on Tuesday, you're not going. You really should call, right? And what's a good trainer going to say? You get in here. I know. I had some trainers years ago, and I probably would be a pretty good one. I wouldn't let you off the hook. I'd be, get in here. That's the whole idea, right? You got to do it. And so discipline is discipline, and it's very funny because there's a parallel I've always noticed between physical fitness and things, discipline, and money as well. And the people who have a lot of money problems all their life, usually that's discipline issues, not always, but more times than not. And as harsh as that might sound, and maybe some people don't want to hear that, if you can convey that to someone who's got that chronic money issue, that it really is about discipline, you may be able to save them from a lot of grief, a lot of strife, and a lot of worry and problems in their life. So, especially if it's someone you know well and you love, check out Kiplinger's magazine online. They did a piece years ago on the psychology of money, putting us all into four basic categories. I think it's terrific. Kiplinger's finance.com probably, and see if they have that, the psychology of money. Take a look at it. You can actually read this list of four different ways of thinking about money. And when I read it, I can immediately see where I fit, where I am in that niche. I can see where my wife is. I can see where my son is, my daughter, friends I have. And it goes from a psychological spectrum of, from one end of extreme is that some people just feel guilty if they have any success at all. They don't feel that they deserve it. And other people are the entitlement group. They deserve everything even though they haven't lifted a finger yet. And where you fall in there somewhere has a lot to do with how you view money. Some people just don't save at all. I met someone the other day that had a family, lived his whole life. His kids are in their 40s now, and he told me he never had life insurance. I can't comprehend that. I had three little children. I can't imagine how I didn't have life insurance, But, everyone has a different view of money. It's very heady, So stay with us here on the Money Talk Show. When we come back from this break, we're going to be talking about trusts. I started that Friday night. It's a bit of a meaty topic, but it's a very important one. So I'm going to try to keep it kind of light. But we come right back from the break. We're going to talk about trust. When do you open a trust? When you don't trust somebody. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bobe, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. This is your station for talking business. Hey, emerging markets are outperforming everything so far this year. Where'd you hear that, folks? Every now and then you get it right. It's tough, you know. Generally speaking, the only time I like to own emerging markets stocks in my client accounts, in my own account, is when I think we're facing rising interest rates. It's always been my belief that rising interest rates in the U.S. Kind of defers some money overseas. There's an assumption a lot of people have that stocks can't go up while rates are rising. It is not true. History clearly indicates through charts that that prices can rise, but they tend to rise slowly. So the truth is that rising interest rates hinders stock growth. It doesn't stop it. So you have, year-to-date, the U.S. market up 6 or 7, and emerging markets up 15, 16, quite a bit more. The last time it happened, it continued for a couple of years. Those folks that I've mentioned the emerging markets to this year have said to me, I hate those things. I've had them before. I said, I didn't tell you to own them before. I'm telling you to own them now. Right? As a matter of fact, if the people that owned an investment for a while really hate it, that means the price is low. Right? That's why they hate it. Right? No one hates it when the price is high. That's when they like it. Right? But you're not supposed to buy it when the price is high. You're supposed to buy it when the price is low. Right? So when are the prices low? When the people that already own it hate it. When everyone you know hates their real estate, get your checkbook out and buy some from them. Because that's when people think about it. It's very simple. That's when people are get to that emotional state. Now, emotion and money are a bad mix. Causes a lot of bad problems. Have a client I'm thinking of, a woman I've had for a client of mine for many years, almost 30 years probably. Her name is Martha. She's one of my favorites. And the great story here is that Martha has been able to build. She's getting near retirement now. I think she's a school teacher. Had a nice stable job, you know, a nice good benefits, but she wanted to do a supplement on the side. So anyway, long story short, 30 years later, Martha's got a big pile of money. And Martha also has a sister who she tried to help along the way to be an investor, and she just could never do it. And so the story here we have is two sisters that I know very well both. One is a client of mine, has never had a loss in 30 years investing, and the other one had lost half her money twice in the very same investments. Why? She's emotional. When the prices drop, what does she do? She sells them. It's the opposite, people. You know, it's very hard to do because you think by selling it now, you're preventing it from going lower. And that can be true. But if you have a diversified portfolio, I'll give an example. A client account in my office that's moderate growth, you know, say somebody my age is appropriate for. It's too conservative for the young and too aggressive for the, you know, for the 90-year-old. But it's good for me. I'm 58. That has about half the risk of the stock market, a 3% dividend, and a targeted rate of return over time of about 6%. And we've been able to do that over time. Short periods of time, you never know. There are some really good long-term 6% investments that didn't make it for a three-year period. That's possible. That's how investments work. So if you're frustrated with any of your investments, be careful. Just be very careful. Usually the thing you hate is what you should be buying now, and that's what people sell. You know, and they say, well, I want to take the money out of the one that's not doing well, and I want to put it in the one that's doing well. And I say to them, well, that's sell low, buy high. And they go, oh, is that what I just said? And I say, yes, that's what you just said. And they went, we're not supposed to do that, right? I said, no, we're not supposed to do that. I'm not going to let you do it, so don't worry about it. It's very difficult. I knew early on, 38 years ago, when I joined this profession, that would be a big part of it. Helping people to understand the psychology of it was the absolute most important thing. If you truly understand something, you're not afraid of it, you're less likely to react incorrectly, right? If you have a Vanguard S&P 500 fund and it dropped 50% and you sold it because your answer is because I didn't want to lose all my money, I would say to you the only way to lose all your money is if America would have to become worthless. Because that fund represents the 500 biggest companies in America. All 500 companies will all have to go to zero value in order to lose all the money. So why would you think that's possible? It really isn't. And I say that if you say things like that when a market's down, you need to learn more about what you have. This portfolio I mentioned that I have myself personally and clients my age that are similar ilk are in it, moderate. About nine mutual funds, they're ETFs, one individual stock, and there's about 5,250 different investments. But the client only has to look at nine different things and understand, oh, okay, that's an international growth. That's easy. That one has a bond. I get that, right? But can you imagine if I sent that client a statement and showed them all 5,250 investments on a report? It'd be 75 pages long, intimidating. They would never look at it, right? So these modern ETFs, I think, are the most efficient way for most of us. I think today, still, with really big money, like giant pension plans where you're managing hundreds of millions, you know, billions, that individual stocks are probably always going to be the best way to handle that. But, you know, I ran into accounts local here, people at work, local professionals that are nearing retirement, and they have a good amount saved, might be $2-4 million maybe. And the statement's 72 pages long. And the first thing I say to them is, would you like that to be 2 pages? And they say, are you kidding me? Can you do that without, you know, giving up something? And I say, yes, I believe that you can. And I show them the portfolio that has just as many individual holdings as they have because they're using mutual funds. But the client doesn't have to look at every single holding when they're evaluating. I think these more macro positions give them a very good understanding of what's going on and possibly enough to ask good questions of who they're working with, which is always important. Tonight we're trying to get to talking about trusts. There's so many things I feel I need to get out. But trusts are an important tool. There are a couple different kinds of trusts. The two major categories of trusts are revocable and irrevocable. Now, think of the words. Really simple, right? To revoke means you can take it back. So a revocable trust would usually have your Social Security number on it, and you get a 1099. You file it at the end of the year like your own investments. But an irrevocable trust is one that is irrevocable, which means you can't take it back, you can't cancel it, you can't back up once you go into it. That's the only one that will remove assets from your estate. If you can take the asset back out of the trust, then it won't be taken out of your estate for estate planning purposes. Those of you who have a $5 million estates need to be concerned about stuff like that. Revocable and irrevocable. Irrevocable trust would have a tax ID number, and you'd have a separate tax return for that, and maybe a tax advantage. Right now, the rates are about the same. Historically, I remember in the 80s, there was a big difference in trust versus in taxation of trust accounts versus private accounts, and therefore, when that happens, you see a big push towards trust, right? Right now, the rates are kind of similar, so I don't think there's not a big opportunity there unless you're a very complicated tax situation. And, of course, we also have living trusts, which is a trust you establish and open today. You walk out of the attorney's office, you sign the form, you pay a fee, and it's open. The trust exists. Testamentary is a trust that doesn't exist until you die because it's not necessary. Its only purpose is to do some kind of function after your death. So that would be maybe a testamentary trust. Now, keep in mind, you need to speak to estate planning attorneys on this stuff, experts on a very complicated topic. I am a moderate knowledgeable person of such things. It's not my trade. We don't practice estate planning in our office. My field is close enough to it that I understand it pretty well, but I would never make those decisions myself, and I would absolutely speak with, hire, and pay a professional estate planning attorney or elder care person. Same person you'd see, you know, to get a will. So trusts are kind of what you use when you don't trust somebody, which is kind of a funny thing. That's a quote from my retired financial buddy, John Wallowitz from Cumberland, Rhode Island. Thanks, John, for that one. He fed me a lot of stuff over the years. You folks don't know it. I kept asking him if I could give his name out, but he always said no. He's humble. But he's a close friend of mine, a very smart financial guy, and that's one of the great things he taught me. He said, I told my clients along the way that one of the reasons, anyway, that you might want to get a trust is because you don't trust somebody to handle the money in the right way. Now, that might just mean that your 27-year-old son has a bad pattern with money. What if you have a child or a beneficiary that's had a drug or alcohol problem? Do you think it's a good idea to drop $200,000 in cash on them on a Tuesday morning if they got that kind of a discipline problem? I don't think so. So you put it in a trust that says they can't use it until they reach retirement. I've seen one father open a trust for a son had to prove he was sober for 10 years before he could touch the money. Not a year, not 2 years, 10. If you never make the 10 years, you never get the money. You want to stay doing that behavior, then you're not going to get the dollars. Interesting, you know, and you can call it cruel, you can call it what you want, but it's personal, and you can do anything you like with that sort of thing to handle your own situation, your family. Sometimes it's complicated, sometimes it's just a lot of bodies. My last meeting of the day today, one of my favorite families, that's really what their situation is, big family, lots of people. So if you want it, you want your family to share in your estate, and you got, you know, 23 nephews, I mean, that's complicated. Naming each of them, you know, on a beneficiary form, there's no room for it, you know, so that's why a trust would name those beneficiaries, and then you name the beneficiary of the account, the trust itself, and the trust has instructions on how to execute what you want after you're gone. So a trust can allow you to exercise your rights and control over some things even after you're deceased. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talking business, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Wow. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. Is that violins? It's nice. A little different. Oh, is that what that was? Oh, nice. It's good to have young producers. Get some hip music in there. Hey, we're talking about trust tonight. Trust is a very important word, of course, in the financial arena. You know, it's important that you trust the people you get advice from, clearly. We've got a lot of pressure in the business today to make us all be fiduciaries. That's something that it just means that you have a legal obligation to do what's in the best interest of the customer, kind of like a doctor, you know, should have, I think, you know. And most people do what's best, I think, in the financial business for the customer, because that's what brings you success in the long run. I heard Dave Ramsey. You all know I'm a monstrous Dave Ramsey fan. If you listen to Dave Ramsey, you'll be my best client when you're 46, because you'll be debt-free, you'll be able to save a lot of money, you'll be stashing it away and feeling good about it. Yeah, so I think it's a great program. I think he has done more good for the younger people in America than anyone I've ever heard before. Now, we're on the radio too, okay? But we kind of are in a different end of the business. We tend to work with the people who are older and have the money and kind of know those things. I didn't make any of those mistakes you hear Dave Ramsey talk about. I was fortunately born with some really savvy financial parents and had a natural head for it, so I didn't make those financial mistakes along the way. But if you find yourself, you know, in a mess like he talks about, you know, he's just the best guy in the world to get you out of that, if you ask me. So tune in to Dave Ramsey, please. You young folks, learn how to live within your budget. If you are borrowing money for any reason, it just means you're spending more than you make, right? You're overliving your life. That's what borrowing is. Now, in a big lump sum, one time to buy a home, cool. No problem, okay? But please don't finance furniture, even a car. If you're a single person, you just need the wheels to get to the studio here. If you work at the station here, you know, you should have a $3,000 bomber. Should have no payments, liability insurance only, and it's a tough way to get there. I remember when I was younger, definitely was more intrigued by expensive stuff when I couldn't afford it, and now that I can afford it, don't want it. I drive a 10-year-old car. My wife drives an 8-year-old car. They look like they're new. They're not totally nice looking vehicles. They run fine. They're not dangerous. I have a beautiful boat that I love. It's 14 years old, 2,500 hours on the engines, run beautifully, and cost one-fifth of what a new one would cost. So, Oprah Winfrey once said, all my life I was told, you can't have it all, you can't have it all, you can't have it all. And Oprah Winfrey taught me that that's not true. You can have it all, just not all at the same time. And you really, over a lifetime, if you plan well, you really can have most of the things that you want. But to think you could have them all at once at age 31, I would think that's a little young to have everything, right? Maybe 61, who knows? You know, hey, the earlier the better. We're talking about trust tonight. Most of you that are listening to this program tend to be closer to my age, you know, within 10 years of retirement. Most of people's savings, or the bulk of their savings that they have when they get to retirement, they will tell you that they did in the last 15 years. You know, so maybe 50 to 65. So if you're not 50 and you haven't saved a whole ton yet, don't beat yourself up too much over that. Now, if you haven't saved a lot up yet and you're 30, but you save nothing on a regular basis, you know, I haven't put in a little bit of money in a 401k plan, then get that, you know, in place. But the majority of us save the majority of our retirement money after age 50, meaning that's usually when you're getting near the end of the other stage of your life, buying houses, college educations that financially just wreck you, you know, cost a lot. And someday you get to a point, I remember when I had children in college, I think my budget was $11,000 a month, now it's $4,000. And I couldn't imagine it ever being, the pressure being gone when it was there. You know, and now it's gone. And so it does happen. If you can get into retirement with little to no debt here in New England, it seems to me, and I may have done more financial plans than any other financial advisor in Rhode Island. I'm comfortable saying that because I've been doing it for 37 years. And I was doing financial planning and charging a fee 25 years ago when no one did it. So I may have done more financial plans for customers in Rhode Island than any other person in my profession. There's a very good chance of that. And that's as far as I'll go with that. But it's just a numbers thing. So you see a lot of different people with different viewpoints. And it seems to me that majority of couples I meet, if they can get debt-free by the time they retire, $5,000 a month, $60,000 of income is a nice living. More times than not, they have half of that in Social Security. So they don't need $2 million to retire comfortably. They need $500,000. And it'll work. Now, it won't leave your children rich, but it'll take care of you till you're 85 years old, you know? So retirement planning is a funny thing. You know, you can approach it from a lot of different angles. Capital preservation is when you take the interest only. You have to have a lot of money today to do that because at retirement, we're investing in safe stuff. Safe stuff pays low returns, and they are the lowest in history. So if you want to go really safe bonds right now because you think you're old, that's 2%. Imagine having $1 million and you can only take $20,000 a year out of it. But then you'd leave a very large estate to your children or your beneficiaries, depending what your goals are, you know. If you have a pile of money at retirement and you want to supplement your pension or Social Security, a general portfolio that you could open yourself at a do-it-yourself investment place, Vanguard, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, if you can get a 6% return, but you take out 10% of the value per year, the money lasts about 14 years. So from age 65, that takes you to almost 80. That's life expectancy. So most people, if the assets are starting to kind of wind down at 80, although I have a few exceptions to that, I had a conversation with a daughter of one of my longest-term client. This woman is like a mother to me. She lives in Florida. Her name is Laura. And the mother was just saying, how can she spend money like she does? She's 92. She said, because she thinks and acts like she's 50. She really does, this one, but this is rare, though, people. Very rare. I'm 58, and I'm more content than she is. She's still go, you know? But, I mean, everybody's different, and I think by the time you are within 10 years of your own retirement, you should probably have an idea of who you are, right, and how you are and what you need. Some people don't like to cook. They go out a lot. That's a big financial issue. I love to cook, so I save a ton of money cooking. I eat better also, better, more healthy. But, you know, if you don't like to cook, I get that, you know. So that's not going to be an area that you can work in your plan. You know, you've got to do something else to kind of compensate for it. Automobiles, as I mentioned to you before, for young families is one of the biggest mistakes you can make. I won't go into any details. I'm a pretty successful guy. I have a 10-year-old car, 14-year-old boat. You never know. They both look like they're 2 years old and run beautifully. Save a ton of money. No payments. Insurance is lower. You know, now, if you get your financial ducks in order, then if you can afford that brand new vehicle, go do it. Why not? At that point, there's no reason not to. You follow me? But if you have $800 a month in car payments and are staying awake at night wondering why you can't save for your kids' college, I mean, duh, connect the dots, you know? When I was a young advisor, I used to, when couples would come to the office for a meeting, I would often do the meeting, and then when they left, I would walk them outside just to see what they were driving. That's what I haven't asked them, to prod them, just to take a look, you know. And it always amazed me that I would run into people, usually couples in their 30s or 40s, who are frustrated with their inability to save and have $1,000 a month in car payments. And I look at them, I go, and you can't see what the problem is here? You know, your car goes to a parking lot every day and sits there. What do you need a brand new $42,000 car for? Now, again, I'm not against them naturally. If you can afford it and if it fits and you enjoy it, I say go do it. But not if it's going to mess you up, derail you, or interfere with your other more important financial goals. I think there was a time in our country where the new car was like the retirement gift, you know, when you retired. And if you take that tack as a young person, you're going to, in the long run of your life, end up with a lot less dough, work longer, and have more stress. So cars are a good rule is 3 months of your income. Whatever your earnings, if you make $40,000 a year, you got 10 grand to spend on a car. That's what I spent on a car. And today, new car, used cars, are they don't rot anymore. Fuel injection, the engines last forever. My father was a professional mechanic, so I know this stuff. And so it's a good way to, it's probably the best offering you can give anybody. If you're just an important person in your financial family and younger people look to you for advice, the best advice you can give them. There is no investment you can make that's as powerful as not being silly with cars. If you go from age 25 to 65 by overspending on cars, there's nothing you can do to make up for it. If you're the average person, you will be in terrible shape financially. The car alone over a lifetime, a new car, to an average earner, will destroy your retirement over a 30-year period. It's immense how much the difference is. I haven't had a car payment in 9 years. Wow, I like that, right? And you folks are laughing. You think maybe I'm kidding you. I have many clients just like me, very successful, very diligent, have lots of savings. And many times in the office, they say to me, hey, Steve, by the way, I enjoyed your show the other night. My car's 12 years old. And the family says, hey, Big Mike, the big success in the family, when are you going to get a new car? And Michael smiles and says, when this one doesn't work anymore, or when it no longer is purposeful. I'm not going to drive it around with body rot on it. I'm a successful guy. You know, I'm not going to do that. It's not a junk. But it's also not $42,000. My car was $9,000 I paid for cash. And it'd be amazing also what kind of leverage you have. Nobody pays cash anymore. If you go into a car dealership and can pay $9,000, $10,000 cash for a car, oh, they wanted 12 for it. I said nine. They just didn't even hesitate. Said, wonderful, write the check. So I took $3,000 right off the car. If I had gone in and said, no, I got to take out a loan, I bet they wouldn't even have moved off that price. They wouldn't have. They wouldn't have. No way. Cash is king. It's a very powerful negotiating tool. So do your best to save. I know it's difficult. Call us here on the program at 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. We're here to do as much good as we possibly can for all of you. And indirectly, we get our reward from that, you know, over our career, over 3 decades of trying to share what we've learned. You know, Don's mission here when we began was just let's do our job, Steve, and go on there every night and tell them about it. What did you talk to your clients about today? What mistakes did you see made? What are some exciting good things to share with the listeners? And so we always call this the final appointment of the day, and you all are our final client at the end of our workday. And we like that. We also like the pressure and the heat. Every time I'm coming in here, I've been doing this for 25 years, I'm all worried thinking, what am I going to say tonight that they can benefit from? We want to make sure every night there's something here that you can benefit from. Another big one is the umbrella policy for liability. For those of you who own a home, have 401k plans and work and drive a car, you have you do not have enough liability insurance on your car policy. Take it out when you get home and look at the coverage page. It probably says $100,000/$300,000. That means that if you get an accident, they're only going to pay $100,000 for one person's injuries. That could be one surgery. What's going to happen after that? Oh, your savings is gone. Your house is attached, right? I've had a $1 million umbrella excess liability policy for 25 years. It's about $300. It's about $300 a year for $1 million, $25 a month. Now, when you're young and building, you don't need it yet. But when you get older and you got a lot of assets and things that are, you can be exposed to losing in a lawsuit, that's when you need it. Can you imagine having $1 million of assets and you're driving around the roads in Rhode Island with $100,000 of liability insurance? Many of you are, okay? And when you talk to your agent about this, about raising this coverage, do me a favor, grab him or her by the hair and ask them why they never emphasize this to you. What happens is that sometimes we pressure them, we pressure the insurance people, you know, we want the lowest premium all the time. So when they're trying to compete on that basis, they always come in with the low ball coverages because they want to win the sale, you know. And that's okay to compare to see who has a better deal, but you really need to have $1 million of liability insurance today if you drive a car or have any assets that you could lose. If you're younger, congratulations. You might not need it just yet, but when you got something to lose, that's when you need it. This is Steve Bove on the Money Talk Show, and I'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. Hey, we are here 5 nights a week. Very often in the office in Lincoln, we meet with new people, and they've heard the show, and usually it's how they know of us. There's other ways, but that's usually it. And they're often very surprised that we're on 5 nights a week, so I should say it, because it's pretty rare. There's not too many financial shows that we like to think that not too many people have enough experience to be here every night. You really have to have quite a repertoire of experience, I think, to come up with hopefully helpful things. If you don't want to be on the air live, but you'd like to request a topic, feel free, please, anytime. You can send in emails and things. I'm not hip on all that stuff. 790business.com, you'll find your way. Especially if you're younger than I am, I'm sure, all through the world of technology. We are here every evening at 5 p.m. Don Sower, the founder of the program, of course, on Monday evening. He's the fearless leader of the team. And Tuesday night, Don and his daughter, Donna Grace, who's now a very experienced certified financial planner practitioner. Like 10 years went by so fast. It seemed like yesterday she came in the office. And then my son Nathan on Wednesday night is here with me. It seems like he just arrived, and it's been 3 years. So time is a-flying. And some wonderful young minds now on the team, which is great. Of course, Tuesday night is my favorite show because I'm home or on the boat. And I love hearing Don and Donna's, just the fact that they're very different in age, father and daughter, 30 years there. And that does matter. At my age, I'm much more afraid of risk than I was when I was younger. So, for example, if you were the young lottery winner and came in my office with $1 million lottery winning and you're 21 and you want to be aggressive and trade stocks and do what you heard about and make all that money, I'd have to say to you, find somebody younger. I probably would have to say no to the account in the interest of being honest and do the right thing. That's a different skill. And I think it's better suited to younger advisors because they, in their own accounts, are playing the same game. I'm not doing that with my money anymore. I'm almost 60. Can you imagine having a 60% loss in your money at my age that you took 30, 40 years to save? No, you can't. You can't do that. So, my area is the moderate to conservative. Aggressive is behind me. I got a few younger clients in their 40s I've had for a long time. I take care of them. But if somebody wanted to trade stocks and be really aggressive, that's a very different skill. I think that's definitely beyond my own level. There are a lot of different ways of handling financial matters, and the question is to learn what all the choices are so that you can decide. You don't want to be sold anything by anybody, and I don't think you really want to be told what to do. I think if you can just be educated, you'll come up with it on your own, I think, more times than not. Hey, we're talking about wills tonight on the program, about running out of time. Talked about different types of them, revocable and irrevocable, and the words themselves really sort of give you a gist of it. A revocable trust means you can change your mind about things. That's not as powerful. It doesn't do as much. An irrevocable trust will have its own tax return and a separate tax ID number. Now, if you open a trust, make sure that you need it. Not everyone does. If all you have is IRA accounts in the investment world, guess what? You sit down, you interview 6 lawyers, you end up paying 7 trips downtown, you end up spending $2,000 or $3,000, you open a trust, you come into my office, sit down and say, Steve, I did my homework, got a trust, I know that's a good thing, and I want my accounts that you handle for me, my wife and I want you to put them in the trust. All right, all done, wrapped it up, nice. And I look at you and say, can't do it. And the client says, what? Said IRAs are a trust. You can't put them in a trust. Then what did I open this trust for? I don't know. I didn't tell you to do it. You see my point, folks? Understand if you really need it or not. You could open a trust that you really don't need now, and then every time the tax laws change, you get a letter from the attorney's office saying you got to come in and pay a fee to update it. What if you don't really need it? You see my point? So trusts are wonderful. When it's the right tool, it is a wonderful tool to use. But make sure you really need it and understand it. You can't put IRAs, 401k money, tax-sheltered money, inside of a trust because it's already a trust. So you can't do that. Now, on rare occasions, I have seen experts in estate planning recommend people close out their IRAs over a 3-4 year period, pay all the taxes, so that they can put it in trust. Depending on how burning a need you have for the trust, I think would indicate whether or not that would be appropriate. Most of the time, no. Leave your IRAs as IRAs. If you have a house, you can place it in trust. If you have cash, you can do that, brokerage accounts, because they're not trusts already. You see, your IRAs are already trusts, so you can't do that. Personal assets, business assets, there's different ways of handling all those sort of things. If you're doing estate planning and you have a concrete business, you know, bricks and steel and mortar, and you have, say, four children, only one is suitable to run the business, well, then how do you balance that out? That's tough, you know. That's where life insurance comes into play. And believe it or not, there are times that I'm an anti-insurance guy, meaning if you don't need it, don't own it, you know. But if you have that type of estate and you want your one daughter to own the business, but you want to be even on the value because you have four kids, then you have life insurance is the best way to do that. Pennies on a dollar, tax-free, people. People don't know that. So many people in the office, when they have a death, expecting to pay, you know, $400,000 life insurance. What's that going to cost me in taxes? $100,000? It's going to cost you zero. Life insurance is tax-free. Roth IRAs are tax-free. 529 college plans are tax-free. Primary residence, you can sell your home, a couple today, and make $500,000 every 5 years. It's tax-free every time. Used to be you could do it once in a lifetime. Now it's every 5 years you could do it. So if you're savvy with real estate, right, buy a property, move into it, live there for 5 years, and sell it, every time the profit will be completely tax-free. As long as you live there 3 out of the last 5 years, that makes it your primary resident, right? You got electric bill, phone bill, all that, right? So this is a great, there's a lot of tax-free things to do. You know, my son is in his 30s, Nathan, who joins me on Wednesdays. His college fund will be tax-free. His retirement will be tax-free because it's Roth. You know, there's a lot of advantages that the generations of the past didn't have. So take advantage of them. And if you're not sure what to do, please feel free to give us a call here at 437-5000 any evening at 5 p.m. We have a stable of hosts, of which all of us, by a requirement on this program, you must be a certified financial planner professional in order to host the show. And Nathan, the youngest member of the team, will hopefully be achieving that educational status very soon. I, his father, will be the first to tell you, because I'll be very proud of him. He's away this week, a little family vacation. Tune in tomorrow night, of course, on the Money Talk Show right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business.